Yes.
Today is June 29th, 2010. We're meeting in the library here at Marist College. The interview this morning is with Roberta Staples. She is the director of the Marist College Counseling Center. Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning.
Roberta, as you see, we're doing these interviews for the archives, and we're trying to get some data and stories about the earlier years at Marist, and you are well qualified to be able to talk about those. But before that, let's just talk about you. Could you briefly give us a thumbnail sketch of your early years? Where were you born? Not when, where?
I'll tell you when, I'm okay with that.
And where you went to school, and so on, okay?
Well, I was born in 1948. In Maine. My father was a sea captain, as was his father and all those before him. He felt a little bit like King Lear because he had three daughters and no sons. So I grew up in Maine and went
to... Were they all ungrateful too?
No. No. And I went to the University of Maine.
Well, before that, were the local elementary school and high school in the same town? Or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the town is Thomaston. It's a very small town on the coast.
Uh-huh.
I think I graduated with less than 100 in my graduating class, and it was a group that was pretty much intact from the time we were five in kindergarten.
So you knew each other pretty
very well.
Yeah.
Perhaps
okay.
More than we needed to. After high school, it was time to leave town.
Okay. And college, where was college? You went to?
University of Maine.
Uh-huh.
In the wild 60s.
Uh-huh.
Stephen King, the writer, was one of my classmates.
Uh-huh.
So those were good years.
Uh-huh.
Majored in psychology.
Uh-huh.
And English.
Uh-huh. What was the motivating force for going to college? Was it part of the family tradition?
Yeah, it was expected. Uh-huh. My father said, go to college, get an education, you'll use it. He had gone to the University of Maine, majored in forestry, and went to sea for the rest of his life. But yeah, it was expected.
Talk a little bit about the high school experience in terms of the non-academic things, or were there any? How about sports? You've been an athletic person most of your adult life. I suppose it didn't happen accidentally.
Well, except for just playing, we were country kids, you know, swimming in the ocean in the summer and that kind of thing, not organized athletics at all. Although they told me, you're tall, you should play basketball. I didn't really like basketball, so I didn't do anything in any organized way. Actually, I didn't start working out until I turned 50.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not an athlete.
And how about hobbies? Choral, piano, music? Empty?
A little bit of a lot of different things.
Uh-huh.
You know, from traditional crafts and design of fibers. I was a knitter, and I took up cooking for a while, and all the sort of home Martha Stewart
uh-huh.
sorts of things.
Uh-huh. Sewing, artistry, mm-hmm.
Designed.
All that kind of things.
Yeah.
A little different change in focus. Through your high school and college, did you have a job at any time? Did you work in a store
mm-hmm.
or in the school? Or
I started working summers at age 14,
uh-huh.
and have been working ever since.
What
you know, summer jobs,
some
mostly waitressing and
uh-huh.
food service, and there was a school for handicapped children on the coast up there, and it was a residential program, so I did some summers doing that. And
so you had a full
work
adolescent
hours.
Experience
mm-hmm.
of school and non-school activities
mm-hmm.
through it all.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Now, moving on, what is the link between finishing college and then going into counseling? Is there a psychology? Is that the link there?
Yeah. Yeah, I majored as an undergraduate in psychology, and back then it was harder to get into PhD programs,
uh-huh.
and I had to pay out of pocket because the sea captain father believed in education, but only so far.
All right, let's not get carried away
with
this.
He had a BA. I was just stopping a BA, so I got accepted in the master's program in clinical psychology at SUNY New Paltz.
Oh.
So that's what brought me to the area.
Oh.
Finished that. in 2 years, I think, 2.5 years. And shortly thereafter, I got a job with Dutchess County Social Services.
Uh-huh.
So I was a caseworker. And I lived up at Dutch Gardens
uh-huh.
with Larry Sullivan as a neighbor.
And Jep DeLanning.
And the Lannings.
Yeah.
And I saw the posting for the position here at Marist.
Okay. So that explains how you found your way to Marist. You
mm-hmm.
were already living in the area.
I lived across the river.
Yes.
And in fact, when I was still in graduate school, I had to write a paper. I was living at Dutch Gardens. My program was at SUNY New Paltz, but I thought I would check out this Marist College to see if their library was open to non-Marist people.
Yeah.
So I just drove onto the campus, and if you remember, this was 1974, 75, we only had a few buildings,
right.
but we had a huge, huge sign
uh-huh.
out by what's now Donnelly,
yeah.
one of those, you are here, and
yeah.
it painted a picture of all three or four buildings. Now we have how many buildings and no signage anywhere.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
The library was in Donnelly.
The library
and
was
I
in
met
Donnelly.
Adrian
okay.
Perrault. He
uh-huh.
came up to me and wanted to know who I was and what I was doing walking around in his library.
Uh-huh.
And he gave me a short history, as he always did,
uh-huh.
about the horses in the Greystone building. I heard
the
all
whole
the
history,
story.
Not just
yeah.
a short history.
And then he let me sit in the library and finish the paper I was writing.
What was the price you paid? But nevertheless, it was worth it. Then you saw a posting for a position here, is
mm-hmm.
that what,
yep.
the way it goes? And how did the interview, do you remember the interview? Was there an interview? And might have been a very simple operation in those days.
There was. I think it was a simple operation, but there was a lot of turnover going on.
In the psych department.
I think Counseling Center had been in the psych department, and it had
correct.
Fairly recently been separated off.
Uh-huh.
And a man named Cagle Moore.
Right.
I don't know how long he'd been at the college, but he was a psychology professor and then moved over to, I think we were in Champagne then, to establish sort of a separately based counseling center. And Linda Scorza was the secretary. She's
uh-huh.
still here
uh-huh.
in special services. And my position was counselor specialist in testing and research.
Okay.
I guess I'd like long titles.
Yes. Yeah, sounds impressive.
But a month after I started, Cagle Moore moved to California.
Uh-huh.
Who was dean of students? Tom Wade was dean of students.
Oh, this is going way back.
He left.
Yeah.
And who became dean of students? Oh, Fred Lambert became dean of students.
All right.
So there was a lot of moving around. It's hard to
right.
keep track. And economic times were very difficult.
This
so
is in the mid-70s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it started out looking like a very specialized position,
uh-huh.
But what then became the reality was that there were really three of us in the counseling center, Larry Sullivan, Ann Haggerty,
uh-huh.
and myself.
Uh-huh.
And because the director had left, Ed Waters sort of oversaw the operation,
uh-huh.
but all three of us were sort of generic personal counseling, testing.
Was Larry Sullivan considered a counselor
mm-hmm.
in those days?
Yeah, I think it was a quarter time.
Okay.
So
you go through an interview, you're given this position. It must have been rather difficult to be convinced that you should stay here with so much movement going around. Or,
yeah.
or was it interesting enough and saying, no, I'd like to stay on this boat?
It looked like it would be a good ride.
Yeah, yeah.
Little did I know how long the ride would last, but...
In the interview process, do you remember, was Dan Kirk there or Bill Idle or anybody like that?
I don't know that they were in the interview. I vaguely recollect it was in one of the rooms around the corner from Bob Lynch's current office.
Uh-huh.
And I think there was a separate interview with Cagle.
Uh-huh.
So in short order, I met all of those people.
Yeah.
But I don't believe it was a big group interview.
Okay. Now you're given the position here. What are you expected to do? Give tests to freshmen coming in? Is that the idea?
That was part of it. And there was some personality. And I think maybe that spoke to the counseling center coming out of academic psychology.
Uh-huh.
And I think we pretty quickly evolved into more of the therapeutic crisis intervention and less of the testing and research. Because my my service to the students changed in that direction.
Okay.
They weren't really interested in taking tests.
The students weren't interested in taking tests. Well, but weren't there a battery of tests given to them and the progress as time goes on and the orientation?
That came later.
Oh, that came, okay.
That came, as I recall, didn't we get some Title IX funding? We were really precariously placed in terms of finances and the size of the incoming classes. And this was probably late 70s, maybe early 80s. I'm not very good with dates. But the whole college had to look at retention efforts.
Uh-huh.
We were struggling to get enough students to fill the class. In fact, in the early years, in my early years, we were renting dormitory space to students from Dutchess and the culinary because we couldn't
IBM.
Fill we couldn't fill
yeah.
our own halls and those Marist students that we did bring in weren't really doing well academically. They were flunking courses and some badly behaving and some not, but it became important to sort of get a clearer sense of what they looked like academically when they came in and then what support they might need in order to retain them.
Uh-huh.
Not only the lifestyle
uh-huh.
issues, but just, you know, academic support and tutoring.
Right.
And the Learning Center came about in those years.
Yeah. Well, getting into Marist was not very difficult in those years. In fact, I think Jack Ebert says when he was a student, he's in the advancement now, one of those, he talks about coming in, graduated from high school, and he didn't know where to go to college, and the word was, oh, go to Marist, they'll take anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were open to educating anybody.
Mm-hmm. Or trying to.
Give me the rationale then. If the economy is so limited here, where does the push come for a developing of the center so that you're able to do more and you're staffed, that you all had positions, and what's the explanation for that?
I think the tie-in was more with the potential to retain students.
Uh-huh.
If we can keep them, they'll continue to pay their tuition, and that would be a good thing.
And how would you, the problems you were dealing with were not so much, or were they, disciplinary in terms of alcoholism, absenteeism, whatever. I mean, they're kind of personal problems. And I know some of your staff did deal personally with some of those people, but would that have been a college issue? You know, were we dealing with students who were not attending class, or and were we trying to motivate them to go to class? Is that one of the functions that you would put into that office?
Yep, doing some motivational stuff, stress management, study skills. A lot of the students came in and didn't know how to begin doing academic work.
Okay.
So we did a lot of that. And in fact, when I first started, this was under Cagle Moore and under the Dean of Students.
So this is a year there, about 74, five.
Mm-hmm. And then counseling was moved under the academic line.
Uh-huh.
So we report actually to Liz.
Uh-huh.
She was my supervisor for a while. And Vinnie Toscano. So we were sort of an academic support.
Uh-huh.
And then at some point, we, and in fact, there were some years that when Larry went on sabbatical, I was the only one doing any of the work.
Uh-huh.
There were some lean years.
Yeah, there were, okay.
But we survived.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then the other development comes with this testing program that becomes popular. At least the taking of the tests become popular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was part of the battery of, part of the paperwork the student had to complete before coming to Marist.
Uh-huh.
So many summers were spent scoring answer sheets and profiling the individual students in terms of looking at their SATs. There was an instrument that looked at motivation, another one that looked at sort of academic skills, study skills, personality.
You describe people coming to your office or to the center kind of willingly to find out what can be done to help their own problem. There comes a point later when there seems to be a kind of a negative aspect of viewing counseling, that there was something wrong with you if you were going to counseling. I recall a survey that Royce White did on that subject. And it seems as though a number of students knew about it, but they didn't know where it was. You know, that was kind of the feeling that they had at that time. You lived through that period.
Yeah, and I think some of our students would say the same thing, and my reaction to that is, if they need it, they'll find us.
All right.
We always had ample numbers of customers.
Oh, you did.
But
yeah.
Maybe it's still the case, hopefully less so, that there is a stigma about mental health treatment and personal counseling.
But it seems to me the other side of that ledger would be that you have a fund of information about the student that they don't know about themselves. And so that if it was changed to something like talent investigation and development, you know, what talents do you have? We know. Do you want to know? Come on over. And I was wondering whether the students in 2009 and 2010, do they feel the same way, or is there a more openness to come to counseling to find out what they can do?
I think the world has changed enormously. Well, back to the testing, we did that, and I would profile the freshman class coming in terms of, you know, statistical data, but we also made available to any student to sit down and go over their test profile. Some were actually told by instructors that they had to do it, others came on their own, and it was just that kind of feedback in terms of advice giving and how they might proceed and succeed. And at some point we stopped doing that testing. I think we ran out of funds, and the transition moved into more clinical work in the counseling center. Times have changed. Right now we're seeing more families come in quick to acknowledge, you know, my son or daughter suffers from depression or eating disorders or whatever. We need to know what kind of support is available.
Is that so?
That never would have taken place 20 years ago. That conversation would not.
That's amazing. Well, I suppose that's part of this whole change that it developed in the students who are coming now. They're not the first generation to go to college. Their parents went to college, and they know the services that are available.
Yep.
And consequently want to capitalize on it to proceed with it. We may come back to this in another way through this, but let's continue with the change now. We're saying that certain changes have developed. Were there the changes in administration, had they been completed with Dennis Murray here when you arrived, or was there still, was Foy still in charge?
Foy was in charge.
Foy was in charge. He was the president.
I was here before Dennis.
You were here before,
By
you
a
were here
couple
before
of years.
Dennis. Unlike Tom, whatever his name is, you know, applied the same year as Dennis. Tom got the painting job. I thought that was a very funny line from that time. Changes on campus. Changes starting with your office. Where have the movements been made?
Growth, growth, growth. When I started, the counseling center was three dormitory rooms in a row on the first floor of Champagne. And we moved from there to what is now part of the dining hall down at the foot of the stairs. And we were housed with HEOP, and I believe, career counseling.
Counseling.
Yep, it was psychological counseling, career counseling, and HEOP. And we were in this big area with partitions in between. So we were there for a few years. And then when Father Lamort left Bern, we created the proposal that campus ministry health services and counseling, mind, body, and soul, really were more compatible in terms of the work that we did, the students that we saw in common. So we moved over to Bern.
Now, who is the administrator? Who are you reporting to? Are you reporting to Father Lamort, or are you reporting to Jerry Cox? Or what's the line of breakdown in terms of the authority there?
And it keeps moving around, but that was the year Father Lamort left the college.
Okay.
So we took over at Bern and reported to under Jerry. And that's also when Deb DiCaprio came in. She had been a mentor, live in, and she became Assistant Dean of Students.
Assistant, okay.
So the three of us, Sister Eileen
and
Howard.
And Sinsola, is Sinsola on the scene yet?
He was running housing.
He was in housing?
Yeah.
Okay. So all of those complications.
Yes, but the three directors in Bern were Jane O'Brien, Health Services, Eileen Halloran for Campus Ministry, and myself in counseling.
In counseling, okay. Were you getting funding for your operations, or was it just pretty much, and who went to the bargaining table to get that? Did you have to go to your superior, as it were, to say, we need money for whatever?
And we were allocated pretty much the same dollar amount every year and made it stretch.
Because prices went up and more needs developed, but you made it stretch. Yeah. That's a familiar story here.
And again, our work became more clinical, less of the testing that was being done. The Learning Center was growing at that point, so they were providing really important service. And the students who would come to the Counseling Center were students, you know, sometimes homesick, sometimes victim of an assault or something traumatic, sometimes family issues.
Now,
is that
the clinical aspect of what you're talking about?
Yeah.
There's more of that kind of work than the academic analysis of data.
And my sense is the academic support side of the house was growing stronger as well. So we were sort of being a little redundant, and counseling became psychological services.
Okay, let's talk about the campus has changed somewhat between the time that you were here first. What strikes you now most dramatically? Maybe the Hancock Building going up, I don't know. There's always something new bursting out of the ground here.
And that's exactly my feeling. And I mean, you started by describing me as director of the Counseling Center. I'm not. I am now director of professional and student development. So almost 4 years ago, it was a lateral move, but allows me to do a lot more training, hosting conferences, sometimes doing the training myself. So I'm working more with external groups that are coming in.
Well, I got that
and
from
how
the catalog.
They love, absolutely love coming to this campus. We have just the most beautiful facility, and the compliments I get on, you know, the personnel. And
Really, Dennis deserves a mouthful of credit
for
bringing this shining jewel that it is. It was rough in those early days, but we managed, we struggled on. Again, on terms of the campus, the library, the place we now see, you've seen different libraries here. You've gone from Donnelly to Fontaine to now where we are here, which has been a drive. Has there been significant or sufficient information for you put into the library? Do you get journals, or are they available relating to the work that you're doing?
Actually, on that note, I have to say most of my journals and information is online. And I subscribe to my own journals. One of the things I do a lot of is violence prevention education and crisis intervention training, and that's pretty specialized.
Well, I would have to say in communications, the rediscovered bibliographical literature used to be the source you went to find all the articles. Now it's online. I mean, why would you bother? And then you can print out everything you want in 2 seconds rather than type and take notes. The students today have no idea of the laborious situation a research paper used to be in terms of those factors. Tell me this, was the building of the stadium a good investment? It cost $9 million.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't have a call. I can see both sides.
Yeah.
That's a big, big price tag.
Yeah.
I don't know that we've seen the payoff yet, but we may.
Well, someone, I think Linus Ford pointed out, one of the payoffs is Saturday afternoon, you will see 100 people in uniform lined up with the Marist College football, and they pay more than $30,000 to come here. Yeah. So it is an attraction for, you know, it's not Notre Dame, you know, but it's not the Marist of old either,
No.
playing on
No,
hard rock. So
it's really impressive. Well, you know, I work out at Mike Ortega's, and
yes.
that building is so much higher
Yeah.
that I can be on my treadmill or whatever and look down across
On
the
the field.
street on that field.
Yeah.
And
And
it's
all kinds of things. I mean, this afternoon or this morning coming in, there's some group out there of girls with nets and I guess it's lacrosse. I don't know if they're Marist or high school or a camp or
They're one of
what.
our summer camps,
A summer camp,
but
okay, yeah.
run by the Marist coaches
Yeah,
of those teams.
yeah, yeah. That's, yeah, that's another happy fallout, as it were, of the development, you know, that there are enough students who want to come to these things now. I understand it's very difficult to get onto the Marist basketball, at least the girls, summer camp, you know,
Oh, yeah.
you know, it's just, it's a sellout every year that for that to be able to. So, yeah, I suppose you might say that. Other buildings, of course, you don't have to travel across to the New Fontaine building or the, I am losing my mind here trying to even remember the communications building there.
Well,
Lowell
actually,
Thomas,
yeah,
yeah.
Lowell Thomas and Dyson, and when I'm hosting conferences, as I
Yeah.
did, Marist hosted the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault had a week-long training for crime victim advocates. So it was law enforcement, mental health providers. We had about 50, and their classroom space was in Fontaine, and they stayed in our residence halls. And again, a group that just